Are you looking for expert analysis and the latest news in the promotional products industry?
You must be, because you're listening to the Promo Marketing Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the Promo Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Norris, Editor-in-Chief of Promo Marketing, joined, as always, by Brendan Menapace, Senior Digital Editor. Brendan, what's going on, man?
Not too much. Welcome back from vacation.
Thank you. I actually wanted to use that vacation as a jumping off point for something I wanted to talk about on this episode today. But real quick, you know, first thing is we don't do this often, but if you're a first time listener to the show, the Promo Marketing Podcast, well, obviously we cover the promotional products industry. But the way this show goes is usually Brendan and I talk about some random interesting things that affect the industry or are tangentially related to the industry, and then we jump into an interview Q&A segment with somebody from around the industry who's doing cool or interesting or exciting things. And on today's episode, we've got the gang from Tricor Brand Communications. We were joined by Mike Button, Melita Callahan, and Shauna Robinson, and they came on to talk to us about an interesting situation they had with an artwork error. A little mishap that they had in a project they were working on for a client. The artwork that they submitted to the supplier did not exactly come back as they planned on the proofs that they started to see. And we wanted to have a conversation about kind of what do you do in those situations when that happens? How do you avoid burning bridges with the supplier in those kind of scenarios? And, you know, especially what both distributors and suppliers can learn from these kind of mishaps and you know, what you can do to make things right for the client. We had a pretty long conversation with them, so we're going to keep our part short today, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But, like I said, jumping off point from my vacation, did a lot of pizza eating on my vacation.
Naturally.
I mean, I do a lot of pizza eating around here, too, but I just did it in a different
venue. You did it in a different place.
I did it by the ocean. But I went to Ocean City, New Jersey, where I go every year, beach house down there. One of my favorite places, food places, is Manco's Pizza, which is a South Jersey boardwalk institution. They have three locations on the Ocean City boardwalk, and the biggest one that they just opened, they actually opened it inside an old movie theater that they took over, so it's enormous. It's like a cavern inside. You know, you go anywhere in Ocean City, you see people wearing Manco's merch all around, and that this trip was no exception. But what they did in this location, since they had a little more space, is they actually set up a dedicated merch store in the back, which was pretty cool because you go in and it had its own separate area with like a neon lit sign. It said, you know, get your merch here, whatever. It's got, you know, piles of shirts and sunglasses and tumblers and whatever else. But I thought a cool thing that they did was they had a program where you could actually, if you buy one of the tumblers, you get dollar refills for life.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, a lot of places on the boardwalk do that with, you know, if you got your reusable French fry cup or whatever.
Yeah.
But this was actually like a legitimate, like, double wall insulated tumbler for, you know, cold or hot beverages, rubberized exterior. It was a pretty nice piece. But I thought that was a cool idea for what is a you know, a pretty well-known chain down there. A way to get, you know, some obvious exposure for its branding and get out beyond the island, so to speak. But also a way to retain customers and get people to come back.
Yeah.
And like I said, that's something that you see a lot of places are doing, but this is especially on the boardwalk. But this was the first time I ever saw it with one of the tumbler like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. It covers a lot of bases. You got, like, obviously the self-promotion, and there's the direct incentive to come back. But also, you know, it's environmentally friendly. Like, if you're coming back and getting refills, you're not getting single-use cups every single time.
Yeah, and for a dollar a refill, that's pretty good, considering a small soda runs you like $2.50 there.
Yeah, so that's a bargain.
But it was also, again, you know, it being in one of those, you know, real high-quality reusable tumbler like that, if you get one of those French fry cups or buckets or whatever, you're probably not going to use that anywhere but when you go to that location.
Exactly.
But these tumblers, I could easily see myself using one, or, you know, to bring one to work for coffee or iced tea or whatever. So I thought that was a really good idea. They had, on the way out, they actually had little branded cookies, or they were like the shape of business cards.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is pretty cool. You could grab one of those. So they really seemed like they stepped up their merchandising game, which they probably, of all the pizza places down there, they're the biggest and most well-known. They probably don't need much extra help in that area, but, I mean, you can never have too much branding when it comes to getting your company out there.
Especially with so much competition on the boardwalk.
Yeah, there's a pizza shop every 4 feet on the boardwalk. So, but I also wanted to kind of springboard this into a larger conversation. So we off air, we were looking at some of the largest pizza chains in the U.S. And let's pull up the list here. We'll go down the list, and I wanted to just quickly go through their branding, and let's do a little ranking for fun and see which one of these chains has the best logo and general branding. So I found this list on pizzatoday.com.
Which is a website that I now want to work for.
I was about to say that. It was Pizza Today. It looks like they're a B2B publication covering the pizza industry.
They've got to be hiring.
No disrespect to the promotional products industry, but if I could be covering one B2B industry, it would have to be pizza.
You know, if you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life.
And they also, it says, lists at the top the Pizza and Pasta Expo, which I think I'm going to try to attend one way or the other. I mean, just as an attendee. All right, so here's the top 10 pizza chains in America. Ready for this?
Ready.
So number one, you got Domino's.
No real surprise.
Actually just jumped Pizza Hut, because in my deep research for this topic, I saw that Pizza Hut was number one as of last year.
Yeah, I can see the previous.
Oh, yeah, there they go. They got it right here. So Domino's just jumped Pizza Hut. We've talked about Domino's before on the show, and we've covered them. They're doing a really nice job with their branding and marketing strategy. So number one, Domino's. Number two, Pizza Hut. Number three, Little Caesars. Number four, Papa John's. Five, California Pizza Kitchen. Six, Papa Murphy's International, which I had never heard.
Yeah, let's pause at Papa Murphy's. This sounds like in a TV show when they don't have the rights to say Papa John's, and they have to, like, we'll call it Papa Murphy's. They'll know what it is.
Yeah, it's just close enough without it being IP infringement. Seven was Sparrow, everybody's favorite.
Michael Scott's favorite New York slice.
Eight was Marco's Pizza, which they actually opened one of those near my house a couple years ago, and then it promptly closed. So I don't think the Northeast was ready for Marco's Pizza. Okay. I think that's probably a Midwest chain. Yeah, they're based in Toledo, Ohio.
A lot of these chains are based in the Midwest.
Marco's was actually pretty good, though. I was a little disappointed when it closed. Number nine, surprise entry here, Chuck E. Cheese's / Peter Piper Pizza.
I find that hard to believe, but it's been a good, probably 24 years since I've been to a Chuck E. Cheese.
I've been there much sooner than that.
Well, you have a reason to go.
I don't hate the pizza.
Really?
If I'm forced to eat something when I go there, it could be worse, I think.
I can't remember what the pizza tasted like. I'm sure it was great at the time for me.
I wouldn't say great, but...
I'm sure I ate it.
And number 10, CeCe's Pizza, which is also... So Chuck E. Cheese's and CeCe's are both located in Irving, Texas. I guess that's the pizza mecca of the U.S.
Yeah, and PPAI.
And I'm sure
they could give us some inside info about the quality of Chuck E. Cheese.
We'll have to ask them about their favorite pizza joint. I would say
naturally they're going there because they live there.
I'm just gonna order a pie from Chuck E. Cheese's tonight. So that's your top 10. I feel like Papa John's and Papa Murphy's should do us all a favor and just duke it out for there, you know, there can be only one.
There can be only one. Yeah.
There's only room for one Papa in the top 10. only one of which we have around our way, and that's Papa John's, which I...
We have Domino's and Pizza.
As far as Papa Murphy.
Oh, yeah. As far as Papa's go.
So let's get to their branding. So we have a graphic pulled up here that has all of their, I guess, their primary logos. So what do you think? Which of these guys has the top, well, just straight up primary logo? Let's forget about all the additional branding and the other marketing. And just go logo.
Forgetting everything I know about them, Little Caesars, I think.
And that's what I was going to go with, too.
I think Little Caesars.
You can't beat the dude with the spear holding the pizza and just chowing down.
Yeah. I know, like, the rest of them are just like some sort of play on the Italian flag for the most part.
Yeah, Little Caesars doesn't even make sense, and I think that's why I like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess he's a Caesar, so he's from Italy. But Domino's, I feel like, is probably the most iconic out of these, if you can get, if you're even going to make that jump to iconic from a pizza logo. Pizza Hut changed theirs.
It's very, like, early 2000s.
Yeah, still. And I think they just recently relaunched their old logo in a play to kind of bring back some of that, you know, that warm, fuzzy nostalgia.
You need consistency.
I don't love their new logo. Yeah, like, I think you nailed it there. It's very early 2000s.
Yeah.
It's got, like, what is it? It's got the red hat on top, but it's all, it kind of looks like a sketch drawing. Kind of wavy, non-defined lines, and it's all...
It's like the opposite of the aesthetic that's popular right now.
Yeah.
It's all about defined lines and, like, very clean, very, like that kind of retro but modernized version of it.
And pretty much all these guys use red in the branding, except for Little Caesars.
And California Pizza Kitchen
holding it down with the palm tree.
Yeah.
Theirs looks like a logo patch.
It does.
You find on, like, a jean jacket, a denim jacket somewhere. Yeah, I got to go Little Caesars.
No, Little Caesars.
The color scheme is distinctive. The branding is instantly recognizable. I mean, you could say the same for Domino's, for sure. Papa Murphy's, again, I'm looking at this logo. I've never seen these guys before.
I don't trust it. Someone, if you're listening and you're a big Papa Murphy's fan, please let me know, like, if it's any good. Like, tell me what I'm missing
in
here.
Write in to editor@pm.com.
Yeah. No, email me directly.
Email Brendan directly.
If you got a problem with my take on Papa Murphy, you can tell it to my face.
bmenapace@napco.com. Send them your thoughts on chain pizza. And the last thing I'll say about Papa Murphy's is I read that it's a take and bake pizza brand. So
okay.
You just go in and I don't know if it's to order and they give you a bunch of stuff.
There are a couple places in, like, Delaware and Maryland. I don't know if you've ever been to a Grotto Pizza.
I have not.
It's really good. It's polarizing, but I'm a big fan.
What's the name again?
Grotto.
Grotto, okay.
Grotto Pizza. And anyone who goes on vacation in Delaware is cheering right now. But you can get, like, half-baked pizzas and then take it home. And we would always do that driving back to the three-hour drive to Central PA.
Yeah, that's a solid strategy for when you're in a place where people are going to be doing a lot of takeout.
Mm-hmm.
If you order any of these and have to travel more than 10 minutes, then you're going to have soggy pizza. So maybe Papa Murphy has figured it out there. Personally, I like my takeout food cooked
already,
so I don't have to do any of the
work. Call me old-fashioned, but...
But anyway, that's the definitive pizza ranking right there.
I think in terms of...
Little Caesars, number one.
Yeah.
Domino's, number two.
Domino's, number two. I'd say I'll give three either CeCe's or California Pizza Kitchen.
I dig CeCe's.
CeCe's is clean. It's...
Yeah, it's clean. Uses some negative space in there. You're not relying too heavily on color.
No.
There was also a CeCe's around here that closed too, so it's tough, man. The pizza biz,
yeah, especially in the Northeast, man. There's a lot of pizza, a
lot of competition. The mom and pops still rule the day around here, which is, you know, that's good news for us.
See, in terms of actual products, though, knowing what I know about these companies and their advertising efforts, I got to give Domino's the win.
Absolutely,
they got cement cement mixers.
Pizza tracker, man.
They have done so much.
You can watch in real time as your pizza is made from the comfort of your own home.
I do love that, and you can, like, change the theme. It could be like tropical theme. It could be all kinds of things. Like, are we a parrot telling you your pizza's on the way? And who doesn't want that?
I always want parrots to tell me everything. I think that's the preferred delivery method for all.
If I ever receive bad news, I want it to be from a parrot.
I will save everyone and not do a parrot squawk on the show. But
no, yeah.
Anyway, now I'm hungry.
Yeah,
I'm definitely having pizza for lunch today.
What do we do?
So we won't delay any further. We'll get to the interview with Mike Button, Melita Callahan, Shauna Robinson of Tricor Brand Communications. Like I said, this is a little bit of a longer one, but stick around because there's some really good stuff in here. I think it's some things that every distributor is going to run into at some point.
Totally.
Our artwork issues, and you know, it's good to be prepared and know what to do when you face these things, and also how to resolve them in the best way, not just for your client, but also to maintain your relationship with your suppliers. So here's what these guys had to say. All right, guys. First off, thanks so much for joining us on the show. It's really a pleasure to have you guys on here. Why don't you just go ahead and introduce yourselves and give a little bit of the background on Tricor for everybody listening.
Okay, well, I'm Mike Button. I'm a senior account executive with Tricor Brand Communications. I've been in the business for 30 years. Before that, prior to that, I had a graphic design company. This was before computer age, so we did everything, you know, slapstick and on the boards. And that's pretty much, and I'm a photographer by trade, and pretty much that's my background. I'm Shauna.
Oh, I'm Shauna Robinson. I work as sales support, and I also do bits and pieces of graphic design here and there.
And I'm Melita Callahan, and I'm president and CEO of Tricor Brand Communications. A little bit more about our company. Several years ago, Tricor Print Communications acquired Southwick Specialty Advertising, and we rebranded as Tricor Brand Communications. And these were both legacy companies, each with over 40 years of experience in their respective industries. This partnership proved to be highly beneficial to our clients, as it combined subject matter experts in promotional products and apparel with commercial print, packaging, environments, event support, and e-commerce technology. We also shared core philosophies such as utilizing deep supplier relationships to provide high level client service. And through our discovery processes, we ensure that we understand our client objectives, their brand guidelines, timelines, budgets, and delivery expectations. And by communicating this clearly with our supplier partners, we can ensure a positive outcome for our clients and ideally exceed their expectations.
Awesome, guys. And like I said, thanks for coming on. I think we got a really cool topic to talk about today. The reason that I wanted you guys to come on was, so for our best promotion feature in the July issue of our magazine, Brendan actually interviewed Mike to talk about a recent experience you guys had where you ran into a little bit of artwork trouble with a supplier. And we wanted to use that as kind of a jumping off point for a broader conversation today. But why don't you guys just go ahead and take us through what happened in that scenario? And, you know, we can leave the supplier's name out of it. We don't want to, you know, drag anybody through the mud here.
Of course. Well, and I will add, too, that we're right in the middle of this, of the supplier in this order. So it's still going on. But it is getting rectified, and they're coming up with a solution for us. So I just want to start off right with that point. But it was really starting off, I guess, with ignorance on our part or my part about the process of doing these sunglasses, which is what the product is, going overseas. And the process is called flower paper. Well, I've never heard of flower paper. I've been in this business for 30 years. And one thing I am learning about this whole process is that right when I think I know it all, I don't know very much. Because the technology has changed dramatically, even over the last 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, you were just talking about being in the business before there were even computers, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely. Everything was mostly one color, maybe two colors, except for print, of course, paper print, and labels and things like that. But, I mean, we're at the age now where we're doing full color wrap, full graphics on metal. I mean, that was unheard of, even really 10 years ago. It was just starting to come in. And so this is just another process that we got ourselves into. This is one of my top accounts, and they provide some really cool art. It's an ongoing campaign for this year that they're doing, and it's really fun graphics. I think I sent you a copy of it or whatnot. But they showed us a proof, and the proof had some guidelines, and they told us that there's going to be some shifting. And on their proof, it says a 2 millimeter margin of error may occur. Well, 2 millimeters is extremely small. And a little shift here, a little shift there, okay, we could probably accept that. But when we got what we thought was the prototype, or the pre-production sample, it was so far off that Shauna, she looks at this thing and she was just beside herself. She's going, and she's a graphic designer, she's an expert, and she goes, this isn't even close. What did they do to this art?
It's, you know, a little more than 2 millimeters, I bet.
What's that?
So I guess it was a little more than 2 millimeters, huh?
It was a little more than 2 millimeters. It looked like completely different art. And so when we contacted them, my customer service person, she just pointed out, well, we have disclaimers and I told you that it was going to be off and this and that. Yeah, but this is not even close to being acceptable. Not even close. And she had mentioned, well, we sent you samples. Well, they sent us random samples, but when you send somebody a sample of a product without the art that it was referring to, referencing from, I should say, you have no clue. The samples look great.
There's no reference point.
There's no reference point.
To show the difference.
So I had no reference point, and all that stuff. And so I said, well, this, we can't do this. This is, we're gonna reject this order. Well, okay, this order is gonna cost you $700 to reject it. I'm going, what? This can't be. Weren't these pre-production proofs? Well, we have a feeling that that they had ran all of them with this flower paper. They didn't imprint the logo on them yet. And that's what we think happened. But when they emailed us, they emailed us with the fact of, well, let us know if these are approved. So in my mind, that's a pre-production sample, right? Mm-hmm. So we actually pulled the order, we canceled. I said, we're not gonna pay this, we're gonna go somewhere else. So we found a really good, another good supplier that does the same thing. And they said, no, no, you can't do these. You've got to do a heat transfer. And what this company is calling is a thermal transfer. I said, okay, so if we do a heat transfer or thermal transfer, then we can get exact art on at least the face of the sunglasses. And they said, yes, yeah, we'll cut it to specs. Unlike the flower paper, apparently, is just all over the map. I guess if you had jelly beans, it wouldn't matter because they could shift, you know, all over the place. It just wouldn't matter. Your logo could be set on the temple or wherever. So we started to pull it, and there was no solution from my customer service rep. And I like her, and this is a good company, by the way. But there was no solution. Well, what if you did this? What if we did this? What if we did that? And I went back to her and said, well, we're going to cancel. This is what we were told by this other supplier. Well, I didn't even ask for a supervisor or anyone of higher up or whatever, but they ended up reaching out to me and I started getting some solutions and they started offering me solutions. So I'm thinking to myself, well, why did my customer service rep not have those solutions for me? You know, when the factory can provide those solutions for me. Well, So the next stage was the heat transfer. Okay, we can do that. And so we said, okay, great. Heat transfer, we'll cut it out. We can't do the inside, but we can do the outside. My customer was okay with that. This is gonna look sharp. They redid the art, they sent it back to us. We got the same exact looking proof with a margin of error. This time it wasn't 2 millimeters. It could be cut differently all over. Well, I thought we could, I'm what am I missing here? I'm on the second stage, what am I missing? And then the director of sales says, oh, well, you know, do you want to do a exact placement thermal transfer? I'm going, yeah, that sounds right. So we're now on the third application here, and I get the same exact proof again with different verbiage, which is now exact placement thermal transfer, with a few different disclaimers. And so that's where we're at. Actually, that's where we're at right now. We're proceeding with, oh, and he gave, and the price was like 50 cents difference, net. And maybe their product is better, I don't know, but these are just basic Malibu type of sunglasses, you know. And so it's just been odd. It's been quite a learning curve. Did you have anything to add, Sean?
Yeah. I think too that you know, respectively, having been in these businesses for so long, that our job is to identify any gaps between design and execution, and that happens in all areas of this business, whether it's sunglasses or if it's a printed piece. And to do that, we really do need that collaboration with production to educate us. I mean, if there's three separate production process options that will yield dramatically different results, and we're given the same proof for all three, it's difficult for us to discern what's the best option for our client.
So it seems like you guys were able to deliver for the client here, but is there anything else you think you might have done differently in this situation if you were able to do it again? But either way, you mentioned a learning curve. What did you guys learn from this whole thing?
Maybe I need to ask more questions. That's possible, but I was only going by what I was given, the information I was given.
I think too that we can also say, are there, if it's a newer method of imprint than we're traditionally used to, is really exploring deeper. Is there multiple production options, and can you explain to us what the difference between these options are? And that, you know, in this case is we don't know what we don't know. And so I would say that moving forward, if it's a imprint method or a production method that we are uncertain of, is just to keep digging until we hear that, yes, this is the absolute best option for your client, instead of taking the first one that they provide.
Yeah, and I would add on too, our suppliers really need to do, I mean, they do a great job, and they're part of our team. And we can't live without them, they can't live without us. And we can only do this together. But I would say a good supplier will always reach out and give you those options right up front. Make sure you understand, without having a little disclaimer here and a little email here, and to really, so you know, this is dramatic. This is not a small little shift in art. This looks like a totally different art project. So. And I would say they really need to educate us more on stuff like this.
Yeah, and I guess it's especially critical now because, like you mentioned earlier, it's there's so much more now than there was. And that goes for, you know, just the number of imprinting methods and printing technology and everything. It seems like suppliers are coming out with new decoration methods every day. It's hard to keep track of these things, let alone have, you know, the expertise in any one of them to be able to relay that right to your client and get them exactly what they're looking for. And Mike, you mentioned off air that even with what happened and with this artwork issue, you know, you still think the supplier is a good resource and you go back to them in the future.
Yes, I do. I just going to have to be more, and I will use them again. In fact, we're going to finish this project out. I feel confident about it, mostly. I will add, we are doing we negotiated some of the pricing and we got that way, way down, and that was nice of them. But we are doing a pre-production proof on this final run. And we have time, fortunately, we have time to do that.
Right. And you guys...
I'll still use this one.
Yeah, and you know, you said, you already kind of talked about this a little bit, but it was, you know, what suppliers can do in these kinds of situations to help you guys and to help everybody along this whole supply chain. I mean, as a distributor, you know, how would you guys prefer that they respond and react? And you know, what's your advice for suppliers in these kind of situations?
The suppliers need to understand that we're dealing with 900,000 different products in this queue.
That might be a conservative estimate.
They're dealing with their products. And so they're going to be experts in what they are trained to do and to provide for us in the printing method. Well, you know, I'm going to go from one color pens to four color, you know, CMYK mugs to these sunglasses and all that other stuff, and lasers and all that. So I'm dealing with all this different facets. I'm not an expert in every one, but I try to stay up with it. So they need to really educate us. Now that brings me to the bigger point, and that's why we go to Vegas. That's why we go to the education days. That's why we have the suppliers in and educating us on the new methods of imprint and whatnot. And so, you know, we do our best. But they really need to communicate with us, I think, something like this.
Yeah, more collaboration. And I would say even at the proofing level, just clarifying guidelines instead of just bullet-pointed disclaimers, of really providing strong art guidelines and best practices for their imprinting methods.
Especially at this level, especially when you're getting to this custom, different off-the-wall stuff I've never seen before, you know.
And if I might add, I would say that they should probably, in instances where they can, strongly suggest like a pre-production proof, especially if the customer comes in not knowing anything about it.
Yeah, that's a That's a must. That's mm-hmm. that's probably the best point here. Mm-hmm. Get that pre-production proof, which I thought that's what this was.
Yeah.
But we never really, and that was my error. I never really asked for a pre-production proof. I just assumed, because of the scope of the project, how big it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was probably my fault on that one.
Now, have you guys run into anything, any other situations like this in the past? And if so, how did that go?
Oh, man, I had one. We did these very exclusive boxes. They weren't just boxes. They were for a major university in our state, and we did the medallion, and they were given to, well, people like Phil Knight, you know, I mean, all the top dogs, or I shouldn't say dogs, I guess.
Shoe dog.
Yeah. But these were custom-made boxes. We did the medallions. They published a personal book in their name. We had coasters. It was probably, I think we sold them for like $200 a piece, or $265, or whatever it was. We did a pre-production proof. We did two pre-production proofs of the box. We did 75 of these total. Customer got the order, and it was not as crisp and as good as the pre-production proofs. And we're talking expensive things going on here, right? I mean, and even though it might have been minor, there was gaps between the medallion and the box, you know, because the medallion's on top of the box, right? Kind of inlaid, if you will. And they were messed up. I mean, they were messed up. And we might have gotten maybe one that was good. Well, when we went back to the vendor or to the supplier and we pointed this out, they came back with, oh, you want them all perfect like this pre-production proof? Yeah, that's why we did a pre-production proof, two of them.
Plus, with it going to kind of a high-profile recipient there, you want to make sure that that's completely exactly what you were looking for.
He was getting one of these, okay? And so... So they actually came back with that. That I was dumbfounded. And I normally, I don't get too hot. I don't get too mad very rarely with vendors ever. But man, this one's kind of set me off. I go, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
So they said, well, you'd have to pay more. We can do them, but they're going to cost you this much more. And it's going to take this much longer, you know, much time. And I'm thinking to myself, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think too is that a little empathy goes a long way, in that many times it's not just a box, or it's not just sunglasses, or it's not just a pen. It's expectations, and our clients are responsible to stakeholders in their company. And if we miss a deadline, or we miss an event, or something goes to somebody like Phil Knight and it's a poor quality, it's a reflection on themselves and their company. And then not try to minimize it, oh, as it's just a box. Is that really that these are commitments? These are verbal commitments, which are the basis of our relationships with our client. And I would just ask that they empathize a little bit with the end client that's having to deal with these challenges.
And that's something we talk about all the time here in our coverage of the industry, is that this is more than just products. You know, this is the medium that it's being delivered in might be a product, but you know, ultimately this is part of, like you said, it's something bigger than that. And I think that's important for everybody in the industry to kind of keep in focus as mm-hmm. they work. But I imagine most distributors are going to run into artwork issues at some point, or maybe it's shipping or pricing, or, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in a given order, and there are a lot of orders that you know, hopefully there are a lot of orders, I should say. What's your advice for other distributors when this kind of thing happens? You know, not just in how to deal with the supplier, but also how you communicate it to your clients?
Well, I would say definitely stressing the importance of open communication at all levels between distributors and suppliers, from ideation, creation, through production and delivery. Even with the best laid plans, we do understand that things can happen in production that are outside of our control, and that the earlier that we are made aware, the better we can communicate with our client and provide alternate solutions. If aren't aware that a deadline is going to be missed until it's too late in the game, it creates a highly reactive situation instead of a proactive, positive one. And so the adage, no news is good news. If they're aware that there's something happening in production, the sooner that we are made aware of it, the better the outcome.
Mike, you have anything you want to add to that?
Ditto.
Well said.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't say it better. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty much everything we had here pre-planned to ask you guys about. Is there anything you wanted to add that we haven't talked to you about today?
I would say what I've learned, and I have a few errors. We all have errors all the time, but one thing I do, even on reorders, unless I am 100%, and even if I am 100%, even on reorders, I ask for proof. And I know a lot of distributors don't do that. I've worked with a lot that they never even send a copy of the art to their customer, which doesn't make sense to me. But and what Shauna said earlier is so pivotal. If you can do a pre-production proof, even if it's a simple pen with a one color imprint. If you have the time and they have the resources, do it. But at least don't minimize the proofs. Proofs.
Yeah, I guess you can never be too careful.
No.
All right, very cool. Well, it was a pleasure having you guys on today. I guess the status of that current project is still ongoing, right? The one with the sunglasses.
We're in the third stage as we speak. Right. And we're in the stage of waiting for a pre-production sample.
All right. Well, I hope everything goes smoothly from here on out with that, and you don't get bogged down in too many more artwork issues. Yeah, Brendan's knocking.
Yeah, you can't see, but I'm knocking on wood over here.
But
well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely. It was great having you guys on, and we really appreciate it. And hopefully, we'll talk to you guys again soon.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. Bye. That's about all the time we have for today. If you guys like what you heard, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Play. Be sure to subscribe on promomarketing.com, Google Play, Apple Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And as always, if you have any tips or comments, send them our way on Twitter @promo_marketing.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, for Brendan Menapace, I'm Sean Norris, and this is the Pizza Today Podcast. Oh, wait, no, it's the Promo Marketing Podcast. Thanks, everybody.